You are listening to Viva and Barnes, Law for the People. I am Viva Fry, David Fryheit, a Montreal litigator turned YouTuber. Robert Barnes is a world-renowned American civil rights attorney. In each podcast, we are going to break down and explain things that are going on in the legal world around us in terms that can be understood by everyone. The audio is pulled directly from our weekly live streams on YouTube, where you can find us on my channel, Viva Fry. And although the audio is not perfect when it comes to knowledge, knowledge is more important than audio quality. Enjoy your podcast. All right, people, we're live. We're live, and I don't know how much sleep everyone has gotten in the last 24 hours, but I think I got to bed at maybe 1:30 last night, and I drank, unfortunately, I think 2 liters, or might have been over 2 liters of carbonated water in the hour before I went to bed, because I was doing a stream on Recchietta, and I needed something in my hands, but I didn't want it to be alcohol, so I had too much carbonated water, which itself caused certain problems. First of all, welcome, everybody. Hope everybody's doing well. I know I can anticipate that there's a lot of stress out there. I mean, this is stressful for me. And I say I have no vested interest. I'm not American. I have a sister and a brother who are American. They're in the States. I've got aunts and uncles and cousins in the States. This is stressful for me in the sense that, like, it has an impact on the world. I'm emotionally invested because I've been following this for years now. But I can feel the aggregate stress from everybody out there. And it's just stressful because win or lose, it's indicative that there's a big, big problem with the system. And I think that's the biggest issue in all of this. What was I going to say? Yeah, it's like, it's not a question of win or lose at this point, although there's that. It's that a question of win or lose. Nobody's going to have faith in the system. And like I was saying to friends and family today, even the winner, they'll be happy to take the W, but they are not going to believe that the system is working properly, and they're going to do what they think they need to do the next time around to protect themselves against a system that doesn't work properly. And like, you know, there may or may not be fraud going on. There may or may not be chicanery going on. A lot of people are going to think there isn't. I know what I think. I know what I believe. I know what I can prove at this point in time based on what's out there. The reality, it doesn't even matter if there is in fact fraud going on. It looks like things are going on. What is being witnessed is enough to cause doubts in anybody's mind, even if things are working properly and smoothly. And that itself is a problem. We're going to talk about it. I mean, Robert and I were on Locals last night for a couple hours doing a live chat. And, you know, we were having a discussion. We were seeing the way things were going up until midnight. And then things started going differently this morning. And it's, you know, it is not like things can't change directions in the course of an event. It's like a football game. You can be up by 3 at the halftime and then down by 2 touchdowns at the end of the game. The only reason why that's not necessarily analogous is that there are trends in counting ballots that don't shift as radically as a game can shift in a football game, where, you know, there can be fumbles literally that change the course of the game. So that was it. So it's literally at 4 a.m. Yeah, hold on. I just saw it right here. Robert is coming in. Oh, you know what? So I just saw Robert come in, but I didn't give the standard warm up. So first things first, thank you all in advance for the super chats. We're going to get to as many of them as I can. I am going to miss some of them, so don't get angry if we do. If you're going to get angry, don't do the super chat. It's for support, and we appreciate it, but I hate feeling guilty. Second announcement, Robert and I have started a community page on Locals. It's called vivabarnslaw.locals.com. It's in the pinned comment, the link, and it's where you're going to get some exclusive content, some exclusive interactions, but it's basically, it's a support platform, much like Patreon, just seems to be more functional, less censorship, less issues like that. But so we have some live chat there, which is not on YouTube. But as far as the live streams go, we're not going to take away the stuff that's open to everybody. But we're going to, you know, there's some exclusive stuff that the local supporters get on Locals. And they'll also get sneak peeks to my videos on YouTube. So that's it. Now I see Robert. He's in there. He's looking good, but I think he's looking angry. That's what I think. Let me just pull up these super chats that I saw before we bring him in. Ghost of Reckon says, yesterday when I was in line to vote, the lady in front of me was turned away because a ballot in her name had already been cast. She said she had no knowledge of it. San Antonio. And I'm going to get into this in a second. Thank you very much, Ghost of Recon. We got Tommy Stewart says, I want the person who won to win. That's all. No sane person can look at last night and think it isn't suspicious. That's the reality. It could be, there could be reasonable explanations for all of this. When there's a lack of transparency and overt chicanery, there may be a good explanation for it, but people are going to ask questions and people are going to lose faith. And that's how systems break down. 140,000 votes all for Biden at 4 a.m. Poll workers had all gone home and then came back in at 4 a.m. with no observers. Nothing strange about that. And I think Steven Crowder just did something of an expose on that. Thoughts on the Pennsylvania Attorney General tweeting that Biden was getting PA ballot signatures don't have to match and questionable postmarks. Okay. I tweeted out, you know, my thoughts on what Shapiro, the AG of Pennsylvania, tweeted the other day. So that's it. Now, this was a last minute stream, and we're up to 7,800, which is it's just magnificent, the community that we have here. And it's what the F is happening. Hopefully we don't have many more answers than existed this morning, but we're going to discuss where things are at now, where things are likely to go. And just uncertainty breeds fear, and fear breeds uncertainty. So we're just going to, at the very least, try to get a better grasp of what things are going on now, where we're at now, and people can know what to look for in the future. Project Veritas will release fraud voter. We're going to get into what can be done, even if there is fraud demonstrated. Biden is at 264, including Arizona. If Trump campaign is confident, they will flip Arizona back. Okay, well, the path, there is a path there. It just becomes increasingly less likely as time goes on. But okay, so the purpose of tonight, we're going to not delve into the unknown. There's a lot of facts that are not known now, and it's not a question of hypothesizing and working on incomplete information. We're just going to set the table as to where things are, things where they may likely go, and answer questions to the extent that we can get them. With that said, bring in the Kraken, bring in the Barnes. Robert, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. I woke up discouraged. Like, I woke up 5 or 6 times between the midnight and 6 o'clock that I woke up this morning, ate a pee, some of that water out because I drank too much water, but to check my phone, which I'm not supposed to do. And then when I realized that we weren't going to have any answers, I stopped checking. But I woke up probably as confused and upset at the state of affairs as the rest of the world. And not because I wanted Trump to win for any personal reasons. It just, the system looks broken. The system looks broken. I mean, what do you have to say about the way things look?
So, I mean, late last night, it was clear to me that there was a risk that each of the states were going to fall within some other people call the margin of fraud. My hope was that the Trump would win at least enough electoral votes, or if it was Biden win by states by clearly a margin, one of the candidates win outside of the margin of fraud, so the margin of fraud wouldn't come into play. Unfortunately, that did not happen. The scope and scale at which certain things took place is very, very troublesome. So I sort of went to sleep hoping that I was wrong and decided I'm not going to comment on this yet because maybe I am wrong. And then people might panic or react in ways that aren't necessarily productive. I mean, there's not much we as citizens can frankly do overnight. You know, we can try to discourage and dissuade certain things from happening, but there are enough people who are aware of it. And I had commented on to people that were would be in a position to take action that this is what I thought was coming. And it is what we've been talking about here for now for months, which is what to look for if fraud is going to impact the election. And there were about 7 different badges or indicia of fraud that we talked about, that I talked about as being risks or what you would look for to see if fraud occurred. Now, that's separate from proving it in court, which I'll get to later. But the first thing you look for is what I said would happen is when historically in America, a fraudulent election occurs, or anywhere in the world, really, but this is particularly true of American elections, one of the parties holds back a whole bunch of ballots in an area where they have a lot of ballots, and they wait to see what the count is in the rest of the state, And then all of a sudden, magically, a whole bunch of ballots pop up that just barely overcome the ballots that they know have reported in the rest of the state. And unfortunately, that's what happened in Michigan. That's what happened in Wisconsin. That's what may happen in Pennsylvania. That's what may happen in Nevada. That's what may happen in Georgia. That's what may happen in North Carolina. Amazingly, there was no such ballot counting problem in states where it wasn't very close, such as Florida, such as Texas, such as most of the, such as Ohio, such as Iowa, such as almost the rest of the country. So that's, you know, the what you would look for is the first badge of fraud, first indicia of election fraud. And I don't call it voter fraud because frequently I don't think any voter committed fraud. I believe that the way election fraud happens is they stuff a bunch of ballots with people who just didn't vote. That's the way that works. So that the risk number one, we see evidence of it in all of the key swing states.
And incidentally, we had talked about this multiple times where we were talking about the issues in Pennsylvania that were before the courts in terms of the ballots that were going to be accepted if received even after the election day, notwithstanding an absence of a bona fide, what's the word I'm looking for? Postmark. Mm-hmm. So we were talking about like that if there's a margin that is within a certain zone, that's where you would look, and that's what the risks were, and that's why the GOP were trying to fight the receipt after election day ballots to be counted. We had gone over the possibilities. Now, concretely, what happened in Michigan last night? I mean, and I'll explain it. Tell me if I got the facts wrong because the facts are sort of not totally known. But the voting ends at midnight, November 11:59, November 3rd. Correct?
Well, usually before that, depends on the state. The polls close somewhere between 7 p.m. and 8 p.m. Some were extended till later. Actually, some close early as 6 p.m. depending on where you are.
Okay, but so that is to say, unless you're in line to vote right at that time, you show up afterwards, too late, no vote, regardless, the vote is over. Now, true, the ballots that have been received are to be counted, duly received, properly postmarked, are to be counted. So Michigan closes down, they close down the voting, they go there, they count like a significant percentage of their vote. And then somehow, and what we've seen is the screenshot, and it is what it is. It could be an anomaly in reporting. It could be an anomaly in registration, in updating the database, whatever. What we see is a screenshot of Trump's count at about 2 million something, ends with a 92, and Biden's at 1.8 million, give or take, 1.7. Next screenshot, Trump is still at the 2 million ending in 92, and Biden has picked up 180 to 200,000 votes or whatever. So he's now basically neck and neck, happens within a split screenshot at the same time. No movement in Trump, 200,000 movement in Biden, closes the gap, and that's where things turn. So whether or not there's an explanation that is logical, justifiable, you know, maybe there was maybe they only uploaded one side and updated one side and not the other, who knows, but that's what we've seen. Robert, the question is going to be, if someone is going to commit fraud, why do it so obviously?
Because they needed it. Is the short answer. I mean, and because it's tough to prove in court, it's that combination. So, because to me, I was surprised at the scale of it because I was surprised because they were sitting on ballots in all the swing states, in all the big Democratic cities. They were sitting on ballots in Atlanta, sitting on ballots in Charlotte, sitting on ballots in Philly, sitting on ballots in Detroit, sitting on ballots in Milwaukee. So while they were not sitting on ballots in Cleveland or Cincinnati or St. Louis or Kansas City, or Minneapolis, or Iowa City, or any of these other places where or Jacksonville, or Orlando, or Miami, so or in Dallas or Houston, or San Antonio, so somehow it's only in the contested places that we have these massive ballot halls suddenly show up in just Democratic-controlled cities. So it looks terrible.
The question that I had is are these ballots showing up from what we know? Do the ballots show up and they were already received, or in theory, the polling station ought to have received all the ballots that they are going to count, and then it's just a question of counting them?
We don't really know because that gets into that's the first indicia or badge of fraud you would look for. It's not a guarantee of it, but it's just what you would expect to find is late reporting from a place with only where all the ballots come in one party's direction, one candidate's direction. The second badge of fraud you would look for is voting turnout disparities. amongst comparable communities, either within a state or if it's a national election between states. So you would look for, is there unusual turnout in Detroit, Philly, and Pittsburgh, Milwaukee, Atlanta, and Charlotte compared to, say, Orlando or Miami or Richmond, Virginia, or Columbia, South Carolina, or Cleveland, Ohio, or Cincinnati, or other comparable constituencies, or Trenton or Newark, New Jersey, et cetera. We find that so far as well. Now, the final precinct-based vote isn't broken down, but what I've seen so far is extraordinarily unusual turnout in urban black precincts in all of those cities controlled by Democrats in swing states compared to what their comparable constituencies did in other places, and that's historically unheard of and unprecedented. The third thing you look for as a potential indicia or badge of fraud is unusual vote margin differences. So, for example, if Trump is doing 5 to 6 points better in urban African-American precincts in most cities across the country, did he suddenly run, lose 99-1, worse than Obama margins, Romney-Obama margins in those big cities and swing states? So far, what I've seen, that same phenomenon occurred as well. The fourth kind of badge of fraud you look for is historical anomalies. More voters voting than were registered prior to Election Day. Now, that can happen because a lot of these states have same-day voter registration, but it's just very rare for it to happen. You look for things like what you were talking about, suddenly massive amounts of ballots being reported at ridiculous margins. And people can go back and look and see what people were predicting about what the margins would be. The margins end up being way more than those predicted margins.
So, but with Michigan, hypothetically, let's just say there's two issues. The ballots ought to have been in before whatever, so they should not be receiving anything on November 4th. That's one issue. So whether or not this was delivered later, whatever. If it was received after November, the end of day November 3rd, questionable. For some people are going to say, okay, well, it just came in late from wherever and whatever. People are going to say, well, these were ballots that were mailed in beforehand, so it only makes sense that they're going to be majority Democrats who were by and large the ones voting early by ballot. Whether or not I agree with that, whether or not I think that that's true, the question is going to be, is it true to 100%? Is it true to 90%? And then even still, how do you account for the disproportion of Democrat to seemingly no Republican ballots in that additional bag that they got or that they started counting it for in the morning? But the argument is going to be people who mailed in ballots early were going to be predominantly Democrat regardless. Did that statistically hold up in Michigan? And if so, like, to what degree do we know?
Well, we don't fully know yet. The thing was, and here we can look at other anecdotal anomalies or statistical anomalies that usually point as potential evidence of possible election fraud. And that includes, for example, prior to the election day, it was showing below average turnout amongst African-American voters in Philadelphia, Detroit, and Milwaukee. And then somehow on election day, it ends up breaking records, apparently. So I just say that's highly unusual, especially when the same thing is not. Somehow African-American voters in Milwaukee are more excited for Joe Biden than Barack Obama. And yet somehow black voters in Cleveland are not, in Cincinnati are not, in Kansas City are not, in St. Louis are not. So this is just, again, this is what you would look for if you were looking for evidence of voter fraud. So far, all of it, vote margin, vote turnout disparities, when the votes were reported by the election board, all of those things. For example, there are different photos all going around of very small lines in urban precincts on election day. Yet when exactly did all these people vote? There wasn't any evidence of it happening on election day. There wasn't evidence of it in the early vote. So there's all of the sort of statistical anomalies, anecdotal anomalies. One last one. If there's going to be voter fraud, the way it happens is you have a bunch of ballots marked for you. You don't mark them for anyone else because that way no one else can challenge that outcome. Well, we're seeing that same thing happen too. Somehow Joe Biden is getting almost 100,000 ballots of people who just marked his ballot, didn't bother to mark any other candidate on the entire rest of the ballot. That's not happening in uncontested states. In uncontested states, the presidential Senate race, which is normal, is usually very close. A small margin drop off, but not that. And not just for one candidate. Usually it'll be equal. Instead, you're just seeing magically in Georgia, magically in Michigan, 100,000 extra votes show up for Joe Biden, but not for the Democratic Senate candidate. So the in both states. So every piece of evidence I would look for indicia of fraud, all of them are here as to Michigan. All of them are here as to Wisconsin. All of them are here as to Georgia. Somewhat so, we don't know yet, North Carolina, and at risk in Pennsylvania and Nevada. That's the what the statistical evidence would be. We would get to, secondly, the safeguards that fell apart and whether or not you can take legal action related to that.
Now, that's going to be the second question. The first question was going to be the statistical. Two questions that I had sent to you in DM just so that I didn't forget them. Let's just assume that you can prove video evidence of fraud. What then? What can you do? Can a state rehold its election?
Mm. Well, I'll get to that as a third component. Okay. Second, I'll get into what the legal safeguards are, and then third, what a legal roadmap could be. In terms of safeguards, one of the key points you mentioned, a lot of the other safeguards were knocked down to make this the easiest election to commit fraud in ever. So historically, you had to vote on election day. Then we expanded that to early voting, but you still had to physically go there, confirm it was you. You voted in private and in confidence. And if you needed an absentee ballot, you had to fit a bunch of qualifications. You had to request it. Someone had to notarize and witness that you filled it out privately and secretly and sent it back. And only you sent it back. And the signature would be checked to make sure it was you. So all of those checks were scrapped in most of these states in different forms. And some went so far, like Pennsylvania, like North Carolina, like Nevada, to allow ballots to come in after Election Day. That was not supposed to happen in Michigan and Wisconsin. It's still not fully clear what did happen. So all of those were stripped. The other major check is supposed to be observers to observe whether or not you're properly checking the signatures on absentee ballots to make sure they match. Observers to see how you receive the ballot, how you keep custody of the ballot, and then how you count the ballot. Apparently that too went AWOL. The suit in Michigan, that's being filed in Pennsylvania by the Trump campaign. I got word from people in Georgia. Some of them were told there would be no more counting and they could go home. So Republican and poll observers went home only to come back and discover there'd been counting in the 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock AM time period. So the way in which, if you want to commit fraud, you don't want anyone to see it. So you have a bunch of ballots stashed somewhere. You bring them in, and you just start counting them. And the key is you need the way in which you bring them in for no one to see. And it appears that too, the possibility, the safeguard against that happening was removed in Milwaukee, Detroit, and Atlanta, and maybe Philadelphia as well. So the last little tiny safeguard we had, I know in Nevada, they had to sue because they were being kept out of watching whether they were checking the signatures on absentee ballots coming in. There was evidence that they were not. So even that last little tiny thread preventing voter fraud, election fraud from happening. And again, it's more election fraud than voter fraud. It's usually ballots in the name of people who didn't actually vote. And we received reports of that. So on our locals page, people said they had gone to saying, "Oh, I think we got a super chat too." People had been in line with people who discovered that someone had voted in their name. So I'm sure that happened all across the country. We'll get into how it can matter for the legal roadmap. So those safeguards were all removed. This election was designed to allow it to be stolen, and it appears that is afoot. And whether or not Trump can stop it from happening is an open question, because I don't have confidence in any of our election officials. In almost all of these states, they're governed by Democrats. The few that are not, like Georgia, the local officials are all Democrats, like in Atlanta. You have Biden people saying go around and get more people to count their ballots after the fact to check their ballot and get it corrected.
This is actually something that a number of people have been asking me, and I think I've been giving them the right answer. But the people working the election polls, I mean, these are state employees and volunteers.
Usually they're county employees, sometimes volunteers, but a lot of times county employees. Okay. And the problem is all Democratic political machines.
Well, that's right. And this is not to cast aspersions, but they are county employees, probably as passionately partisan as anybody is these days. And in exercising their discretion as to what passes and what doesn't, they will exercise that discretion with whatever passions or biases they may have.
Exactly. And the other indicia of fraud we've referenced on the show before is also present. It does these anomalies occur in cities and counties where only one party has almost complete control, unchecked control, and where there's been a history of accusations or actual indictments for vote fraud, election fraud. And that's true in all these places. True in Atlanta, true in Philadelphia, true in Detroit, true in Milwaukee. Particularly bad in Philadelphia, where an election judge was caught committing just brazen voter fraud, election fraud. But that's the nature of it. So given the scale of it, that's the one safeguard against that was supposed to be observers that were volunteers that came from both candidates and both parties. And so to watch at least that part of the process, apparently even that was not honored last night.
This is the problem. Like, we're dealing with Twitter videos and, you know, I say information, and there is misinformation out there, clips that are taken out of context. But from what we are seeing, people's anecdotal statements on Twitter, the supervisors were not allowed within eyeshot of the polls. Some of them were asked to leave the room effectively. I just saw a video now of them boarding up windows. I don't know if the people outside the windows were official observers, but you know, nothing screams transparency like blocking windows type thing. So we're dealing with anecdotal evidence, some of which might be warped, skewed, taken out of context, or deliberate misinformation, but a lot of anecdotal evidence that the poll supervisors were not given the required access to properly supervise the count.
And that some were misled. Some were misled into leaving about there being no more vote counting and then vote counting occurring. And so like in Milwaukee, they were transporting by police car the ballots from one place to another place, which I didn't quite understand.
I saw the picture of that as well. But like you see a picture, you see a 30-second video, you don't know anything. And I don't want to retweet something that might be totally fabricated or constructed. But yeah, we see a picture of ballots being transported by police car. Why and how and what in God's name of God's green earth is going on right now? Like, I made a joke on Twitter, like, you know, we can send satellites into orbit to send messages down to our phones, which are 100,000 times more powerful than the computer we use to land on the moon. And this is how elections in the most powerful nation on earth are. It's like a high school election. It's like watching a Matthew Broderick movie, The Election. Good movie. I think we referenced this one before. But you see the indications, and people can call you whatever name they want. If anybody looks at this and doesn't have questions, that's their prerogative. I don't think a great many people, even the winners, are going to look at this and say there are not things that look fishy. And I think the problem is the winners should be asking this question too, because if things are not fishy, it's always going to undermine an otherwise legit victory, which arguable at this point. So. And anybody not following Robert, he's been tweeting these anomalies, these statistical anomalies throughout the day, why there's so much more turnout at one polling station versus another, comparing. He's been doing this all day, and it's fascinating to follow. Okay, so what do we do now?
So the legal roadmap is it's hard to prove. So I would still gather all of these statistical anomalies as part of the record. And in my view is, if Trump's really going to fight this the smart way, he needs a bifurcated approach. One for the court of public opinion and the other for the court of law. With a court of public opinion, get all of these stats out there. Make sure you get the accurate ones, because as you point out, there's a wide range of stats. Some people are misinterpreting information or data. Some videos and the rest are unreliable. Get the reliable ones, authenticate it, get the reliable data, put it out there, and start hammering it. So as to these statistical anomalies that are unheard of, unhistorical, unprecedented, part one. Part two, find the egregious examples. Find the people like the Super Chat person mentioned. He knew someone that said that they were surprised they were in line to vote because they had not cast their ballot. Every example of that, find that everywhere you possibly can. Cross-check where someone's vote was counted twice. Here's the hard part. The hard part is they steal ballots in places where they're heavily Democratic areas. So you're going to have a hard time finding someone who's going to admit, oh, you know what? No, I didn't actually cast my ballot. But if you do it thorough enough, you can usually find some, and you don't need many. If they really screwed up, they'll have voted for some people who died in the last 3-4 months, or people that moved several months ago or years ago. Like in Texas, you can get, anyone can get the entire voter file of every name on there and cross-check it with obituaries, cross-check it with death reports, cross-check it with move reports. I know Trump's team has access to these voter database files that can do that. Start doing that. You don't need to find tons of them. Just find enough of them and find a couple of egregious ones and hammer it in the court of public opinion, because that will raise doubts in the court. Will be like, oh, wow, you have an egregious example of it here, egregious example of it there, because the statistics only get you so far in the court of public opinion. You need some story narratives that fit with that. That would be part two. And so those would be my two-part goals in the court of public opinion. Persuade the court of public opinion this was stolen. Then separate, or that an attempted steal is occurring. The separately in the court of law, the hard part is the courts do everything they can to cover up the fraud in our elections. They'll be really ruthless with an individual accused of committing some form of fraud, but they go out of their way to pretend that there's nothing wrong with American elections. And that is on both sides, when vote suppression occurs and when election fraud occurs. However means the election fraud occurs, our court systems have a long and notorious history of trying to stay out of it. Bush v. Gore was the only time they got involved, and they waited a long time to get involved. They didn't get involved until more than a month after Election Day, when it was clearly egregious what was going on in Florida. So on the legal courtroom side, the first, he's doing the smart thing, file suits about observers who were denied access. The big question will be remedy. Usually the remedy is to recount those ballots. But the problem is, the reason why you have the observers to see how those ballots came in to the ballot box in the first place. So to me, the remedy should be those ballots get thrown out. They don't almost ever give that remedy.
One question on that issue. Do the ballots, is there cases of the ballots being destroyed afterwards, or are they required to keep the ballots so that you can have this post facto audit, so to speak, to cross check the ballots with the voters?
For now, the ballots are there. So in almost everywhere, they're supposed to keep them for a potential recount. Okay. Because in some states there can be, people had asked, I think it's one of the local subscriber questions, was how does recounts work? What's the rights to a recount, et cetera? A court can issue a recount at any time. And there are examples, by the way, that when there's been any evidence of voter fraud, them ordering another election. Now, that's never happened in the presidential context. So that would be interesting. But it has happened in the congressional context. It has happened in the Senate context. It has happened in the mayor and gubernatorial context. Happened just a couple of years ago in North Carolina, where they just found some evidence of absentee voter fraud, nowhere near the margin of victory. And they said any evidence, now that was the election commission that stepped in and did that. A lot of Democrats are on that commission, so it probably is why they did it, because of the Democrat who lost. So there is that aspect of it. But that is a potential theoretical remedy. You could order, the Supreme Court could order states to redo their election. There's nothing that prohibits them from doing so. That remedy has been given before by either election administrators or by judges, as the case may be. It's rare. It's difficult to obtain. Never has happened in the presidential context, but has happened before.
Okay. So, now let's just go down that road for 1 second. Hypothetically, they'll order five states to do, hypothetically, it's conceivable. The courts could, faced with sufficient evidence, order certain states, probably the five swing states, to rehold elections. Conceptually, is there a date in the Constitution by which the new president has to be sworn in?
Supposed to be by Inauguration Day. So if they did that, and theoretically, the Electoral College is supposed to meet before then, and so on and so forth. But as a practical matter, what they would do if they ordered something like that, it would happen pretty quickly. Okay. It would be like within a week, something like that. And, again, Justice Barrett could have issued a vote that could have prevented all this from happening when the Supreme Court shut their eyes and ears, speak no evil, see no evil, hear no evil. When they did that routine a week before Election Day, they sent a signal to everybody, hey, go ahead and try what you're going to try. That's what Roberts and Barrett did by their two refusing to get involved. So unfortunately that too was predictable, but they've disgraced our legal system and created a disaster where half the country, no matter what happens in this election, half the country is going to believe it was stolen.
Well,
and a failure of them to do their job.
I think more than half the country is going to feel that it was illegitimate. It's just that some of them are going to be relieved that they came out on the good side of the illegitimacy this time, but they're going to be suspicious next time. It's like, this is how a system breaks. But the question was this now. Okay. So in theory, a state could be ordered to rehold its election. This would all be done. I imagine this is going to be done on an emergency basis to the extent it's ever going to be done in Michigan now. So I think I understand the generalities of the lawsuit that has been filed. I couldn't get a copy of the proceeding just yet, but it seems that Trump is suing not to stop counting as of midnight, but rather to stop counting or to not count ballots that came in after midnight. And
for a recount of ballots, basically the basis of the suit is that his observers were excluded. So his observers were excluded when they were counting the ballots. He's asking for all of the ballots to be recounted when his observer was not present and no other ballot counting to occur until that is clarified.
Okay.
That's the main issue.
And then subsidiarily, if the secondary issue is going to be they're going to recount, then the question is going to be what ballots are they going to exclude from that count if they were received after, not post-dated. Postmarked is the word I'm looking for. Sorry, not post-dated. So there's going to be like a subsidiary question as to when the ballots were received and whether or not they were postmarked. Was there any debate or any issue in Michigan as to accepting receipt of ballots after Election Day if they were postmarked?
No, in Michigan and Wisconsin, they could only count ballots that were received by Election Day.
Okay.
So the key is, here's the hard part. The reason for the observer is two reasons. One is to see how, is mostly to see where they get the ballots from. The second part is to see how they're counting them. But the biggest one is to make sure the chain of custody is correct for ballots. And you can't remedy that by recounting the ballots because you can't see where the chain of custody originated from.
That's so, another people.
That problem, I think they can only fix that problem by a revote.
Because that's an issue that people are asking is these ballots are not, they're not received at the polling stations. So setting aside all of the ballot harvesting and, you know, the other issues about paying people to vote a certain way, they've mailed in these ballots. They go to the post office, they get received at the post office. What happens after that? I mean, where do they go? Where do they sit until Election Day?
That's the big open question, is chain of custody of these ballots. Because I'm at least we're seeing anecdotal evidence from what Steven Crowder has presented, from what we're seeing, from what people are sending us, from news stories I even saw about Milwaukee with the cop escorting the ballots, that there are issues with chain of custody of the ballot. And again, it's the reason to have an observer involved in the entire process, an observer to see when the ballot comes in, how the ballot is checked, is the signature competently reviewed, then the ballot is put in a particular place, a secure place. Anybody that knows anything about chain of custody in police cases and how things can go missing. Like, they have strict rules in police context for a reason about mm-hmm. how evidence gets stored. Anybody knows about how they work that evidence knows that they don't always follow the rules. But if you're a criminal defense lawyer, you know how to take that apart because you track what exactly, where did this go? When did this go? Who could have checked it out? Who had access? Does it make sense? And it appears there's anomalies there too. So at least and again, that concerns me because this should have been open and transparent from the inception. The only thing I would fault Trump's team for is if maybe they should have brought suit to make sure this was public and clear from the inception as to what was happening.
Or when I'm looking at this and hearing the complaints, I don't know how this is done, but to me, it seems like you would have wanted to have a heck of a team on ground in these key locations, which it doesn't sound like the Trump campaign had, especially in these, call them hostile environments, for lack of a better word. You're dealing with Michigan or big city Michigan, where you there are forces you're dealing with. It didn't seem like they had.
And there are two issues there. I mean, one is the great weakness of Trump throughout his administration has been his appointments. He needed to put people that shared his beliefs, his populist inclinations, anti-establishment beliefs around him. He did not. He was discouraged from doing so by Mitch McConnell and others. But that was always, I was trying to call it out when Steve Bannon left. I said, he really needs to get someone like Bannon around him because he won't be prepared for this without somebody like that, who knows how to fight in the, not just people who know how to fight, on the polo field, but people who know how to fight in the back alleys. And unfortunately he had no one around him like that, still doesn't really. So it's a limitation. He can't do everything himself. He has tried to, and I think it's a mistake. And the second one is his campaign team was always weak. As I've commented on multiple times with Richard Bears.
Yeah, I mean, so strong in terms of strategy and messaging, but weak in terms of anticipating the chicanery that your adversary is going to pull in the heat of battle.
Yes. And, you know, I'm not going to be too harsh on him because, you know, I've run into cases and situations where I have found historically that the more idealistic if I project my traits onto others, I will get burned in the legal world. Sometimes in the political world too. And if I assume people are coming at things from a good intention, good faith, well-meaning, I will be ambushed and surprised. And it's a sad reality, but you have to approach the legal world and the political world with a deeply cynical perspective, not because you want to be negative towards human beings, but because you will not be prepared for these kind of contingencies unless you are. I remember years ago having a discussion with a lawyer who was going to be part of the Jeff Skilling case and the Enron case. And I laid out this whole thing. I said, here's what you can anticipate, this, 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 and this. And she's like, man, when did you get so cynical? And I was shocked by the question. I was like, that's not cynicism. I'm just laying out to you what's likely to occur. She couldn't even grasp it. By the end of that case, she was so cynical about the process because not everything I predicted had come true that she quit criminal defense law altogether, which is an unfortunate reality. People who go through the litigation wars get burned by them and never want to be a lawyer ever again, or at least Robert,
you know my history, and a lot of the subs here know my history. I'm still doing it, but to a much lesser degree, but 10 plus years. And I couldn't keep up with it in the sense that you know what's coming. You assume that it just won't happen because this is not what you do. And even in the heat of battle, there are rules and people don't follow the rules. And your job as an attorney is not just to pick out the people who are not following the rules and prove that they're not following the rules. It's to try to win the war without yourself being compelled to break those rules. And it's not for everybody. It wasn't for me. And I remember stories where I couldn't believe lawyers would do this. And I just couldn't compete with it because I was not prepared to do it. I'm not prepared to tell my client to delete emails, not prepared to tell them to delete voicemails. And I'm not prepared to not communicate documents because they didn't ask for them with the proper wording, because I have a fear of God and I have a fear of a judge. But this is what we're seeing in politics. It's cutthroat and it's vicious and it's remorseless.
No doubt about it. And it's I had a hope. The only thing I might have done differently is put out publicly what I thought was coming, but I really hoped it would not reach this, because this creates bad distrust in the country. It undermines credibility of institutions that we need for democracy. Does a lot of things that I would rather not see occur in the world. And and generally, when I'm sort of distressed by something, I just go to sleep. That's my default. I'm like, I was going to go to sleep, pray about it, hope it turns out good. If I wake up and the world's the other way, I'll be ready to battle. And I've been through the many versions of this. And for people who may be down and feeling, you know, we've been through all kinds. They stole it from Andrew Jackson in 1824. No dispute about it. What did it do? It led to Andrew Jackson 1828 and a populist revolution in America that changed the country for the next quarter century. They stole it in 1876. Now, that has less than a happy ending because it led to the withdrawal of Reconstruction forces in the South and racial and class-based oppression for about 100 years in the South. So but that's no reason not to fight. So no reason not to resist. As I told the subscribers on our locals board, you know, one of my favorite quotes is Nelson Mandela's quote, who, while in prison, used to repeat to himself, "I am the captain of my own fate. I'm the master of my own soul." And it was a point he told himself about all we can control is how we react. We cannot control what other bad people will do. And as long as we act consistent with our conscience and our capabilities, the reality is the only resistance to evil in the world has been good people doing what they can. And over the course of history, good people have won enough to justify keep doing that.
You know,
so
but you
I'm,
know,
the problem I'm not yet planning a vacation to Cuba.
Well, my problem, I'm discouraged, not because I wanted a Trump win per se. This feels like a victory. And like I said on Twitter, it feels like a victory for the media and the big tech duopoly who have been playing in tandem to just try to move the needle enough to get their way. And you know, you imagine Trump, who has been battling, whether or not you think he deserves it, 90 plus 95% negative press day in and day out for 4 years, coupled with censorship of material information in an election cycle, coupled with celebrities with millions of followers. And with all of that, and with the anomalies we've been witnessing, this is how close it was. If it were a fair playing field, what would it would have been a walk in the park. You know, you don't even have to be a Trump fan to acknowledge that. But
I put it is we're sort of in act two of the West populist rebellion that is sweeping across the Western world. And usually in act two, something bad happens. And so let's just hope act three is the return of the hero. And so whatever happens with Trump, I still have faith in the instincts that's driving American and Western working class people across the world is opposed to these lockdown logic ideas and opposed to these anti-democratic, little d-democratic instincts, whether it's Brexit in the UK, whether it's various populist parties, resurging in different ways throughout continental Europe or the United States. That instinct is not going away anywhere. So their attempt to steal it, their sense to rob it, I mean, in 1896 was also probably stolen in certain respects. We don't know because the margins were big enough, maybe that it was outside the margin of fraud, but there's no doubt they committed massive fraud against William Jennings Bryan, told people that they would be laid off unless they came back with a ballot that said they voted against Bryan back before we had a secret ballot in many places. So this is not totally new to the United States. We've faced this before. And the good news is with Trump, there's no chance he's going gently into that good night.
If there's a silver lining for people who Trump supporters is that, he's not going quietly. And it's not a question of, burning the system down in scare quotes out of spite. This is a question of someone who will expose the fraud that they think is there. It was, it's been his mantra since day one. And I know there's people who are thinking third act, 4D chess. This is the next stage in draining the swamp, expose the fraud. I don't think anybody wanted to. I don't think Trump wants to win like this. I think he would have rather won last night. But it's definitely act three in this. It's just a question of how's it going to end. So hold on. Just before we actually do one thing, Robert, look at the camera for one sec. I'm going to just take a screenshot because this is a momentous occasion. 18,000 people watching live on a stream where we called with barely 2 hours notice, because I think there are a ton of people with these questions and people are lost.
For people out there, there's ways you can crowdsource it. So gather information whatever way you can. Gather information of people who say that like what the guy said about San Antonio. He met someone that said who said she hadn't voted, whose vote was recorded in her name. Try to find those people. The list is public in places like Texas and other places of who voted. Usually you can get that list. There's ways to get that list. There's data files that people can get. You can support the people that are going to be doing this work. I mean, Richard Barris at People's Pundit Daily is going to be involved in trying to expose all this. By the way, he was by far, here's been one of the most personally demonized, blacklisted, smeared individuals in the polling world by far since 2014. And all he's done is have the closest election results in his polls every single election cycle. Because like where I thought Trump would win Minnesota, for whatever reason, it drifted the other way. His poll said it was going to drift the other way. He was the one that said it was razor thin in Wisconsin, razor thin in Michigan, that Trump had a slight lead in Pennsylvania, that it was a slight lead in Arizona, slight lead in North Carolina, but that he had a good lead in Florida, good lead in Iowa. I mean, the reason why my bets made money was because I had a bunch of money on the Florida margin of victory, the Ohio margin of victory, the Iowa margin of victory. Cash.
Let me stop you there, actually, because now it reminds me. James Woods put out a tweet. It said one of his liberal friends asked him, how does Trump win Ohio with that margin and then lose the two other neighboring states? And I don't want to make a fool of myself. I think it was Michigan.
Wisconsin. And it's even close in Pennsylvania. I mean, the reason why I knew the fraud was potential last night is I was looking at, again, Republican counties all were fully counting their ballots. So that was letting the people know in Detroit and in Milwaukee and in Philly how many ballots they were going to need to find, with the find in quotes. But I saw that the margins were close, that Trump was running about this. Turnout was about 10% up as expected, or as I expected. He was winning by about the same margin, sometimes half a point down, sometimes 1-2 points up. So I was like, okay, he did a little weaker in the suburbs than I thought he would in some religious conservative suburbs. The Ben Shapiro endorsement's clearly utterly useless, but that's another story. The, nothing against Ben, but I knew I was like, man, and I saw that they were sitting on ballots. And the so I knew that the you know, I've been, for people who don't know, I used to do political campaign consulting back in the day. Actually, it was mostly Democrats I consulted for, some Republicans. I was independent, but in that world, it's tough to be one party. It's tough to work for both parties generally, because they want you on one side. But so I've experienced this. I've witnessed it. I've seen it. I lived through it in a mayor's race, where they stole it, flat out stole it. And to give you proof of it, I told people these seven guys I thought were responsible for stealing a bunch of ballots out of black precincts. My candidate was the African-American candidate. They got him to vote for the other guy. By fraudulent means, they all ended up in prison within about 4 years for other forms of fraud. So the old saying in the South is if you sit by the river long enough, you can watch the body of your enemy float by. So there's some truth to that. And that's where I think no matter what happens with Trump, this is the beginning of the third act, period. I think whatever happens with Trump, this is not the end of the story. This is going to be the beginning of the story, because what Trump has done is he's exposed the corruption in all of our institutions, the court system, the FBI, the CIA. A lot of people were asleep and did not know how corrupt our systems had become. Corrupt not only institutionally in a moral sense, not being consistent to constitutional principle, but corrupt in incompetence, corrupt in being dangerous. I mean, we got it. If you go back and read the story of the bankers and other governments that led up to World War I and to the banking collapse at the end of World War II, or right, what led us into World War II, that the same thing was happening. You had morally corrupt, incompetent people. You had what I will start calling Sullivan disease, people that are both dumb and corrupt in positions of power. And when that happens, we've seen horrific things happen. I mean, we think that whatever happens to this election is bad. Imagine a world war coming out of it. Imagine 70, 80 years of communist rule or fascist rule, 30 to 40 years of that happening in different countries around the world. The hundreds of millions of people who died and were tortured. So we face something consequential, but we're still not there yet. And no matter what happens with Trump, there's the power of the people to make a difference is still strong. And so it was far more irrational for Medgar Evers to believe he could change the world, being one guy in Mississippi in 1950s after 90 years of racial oppression, than there is for any person sitting at home tonight to think they can't make a difference, because the powers that be are have a lot of power and they're very corrupt and they're willing to do anything to win. They can't control the conscience of man or the heart of man or the brain of man. And that is ultimately the greatest source of resistance to evil in the world and remains so. But people can talk to their state senators, talk to their state house members, talk to anybody they know in elected power with political power to say this is wrong and something needs to happen different. We could use this as to radically reform and restructure elections, period. We should have open, transparent, free elections. We should make it easier for people to vote and easier to make sure that only the people who vote are the people who say they voted. We can do both. It was, you know, some Republicans don't want, the others, some Democrats don't want, but we should have open, fair, free democracy. We can use contemporary technology like blockchain technology, other technology, so that you can know not only whether your vote was counted, but properly counted, but that only you be the person who knows that. Every person can check to see, to make sure that your vote only counted once. There wasn't somebody my brother-in-law went to vote yesterday in Las Vegas. They gave him a hassle because they said he lived somewhere different than where he lived, which led me to believe, and he was worried, that someone else had voted in his name. Don't know if that happened, because ultimately they let him vote, and maybe they scratched that other ballot. Maybe they didn't. Maybe no other ballot occurred. Maybe it didn't. But this is what happens when we have one party control the ballot counting process. It's like having refs from that are fans of the University of Alabama ref the Alabama-Tennessee football game. That's a bad idea, but that's our entire election system in America. No, so there's a lot of places for real reform.
No, and most people don't fully appreciate that as to who's counting who is receiving, counting, and interpreting the ballots when there is a discretionary element in processing a ballot. People have been asking, and it's from one of the, I'm going to get maybe a few questions from the locals. Michigan is one thing. There is what we're calling Sharpie Gate, which apparently might spill into Michigan as well, but it's in Wisconsin, where apparently...
Arizona,
sorry. People were given Sharpies to mark their ballots, and because it bleeds through, the ballots get disqualified. Okay, my first question is, and I've heard this, I presume it's... I'll take for granted it's true, maybe a good faith error or whatever. The one question would be, I didn't understand how it targeted Republicans more than Democrats. And then the second question is, are we going to be dealing, is the hanging chad of 2000 going to turn into the Sharpie gate of 2020, where the lawsuit's going to be, okay, we want everybody's ballot counted. If they accidentally defaced their ballot because of instructions given to them by incompetent or corrupt ballot workers, poll station workers, let's count those ballots too. And that's going to be part of the recount.
What the one case the Trump team should use is what happened in North Carolina when they just found a few ballots of absentee ballot fraud. They required a new election. They should be hammering that case in the court of public opinion and in the court cases, at least start to make them aware of it as a remedy, because I think it ultimately that's going to be the only remedy in Michigan and Wisconsin. Potentially it's either throw out the ballots which were improperly counted without proper if there's no consequence to violating the observer rule, they're going to just keep doing it forever. And we don't really have a rule. There's an old saying in the law. If you have a rule that's not enforced, you don't have a rule at all. If you have a law that's not enforced, you don't have a law at all, because it's dependent and contingent upon its enforcement. And so what happened, the reason why they knew in Arizona is they knew that all the Republicans were waiting till Election Day. They knew that the margin was 4-1, 5-1 odds that anybody showing up at your precinct on Election Day was going to vote for Trump based on the polls and based on the voter file data they had. And so apparently somehow they accidentally gave them Sharpies, knowing that that might have the effect of discount of not their ballot not counting.
Some people, the flip side are saying that it did not in fact invalidate the ballots, so it's a red herring or it's a distraction. Again, this is why, like, you don't want to come off as jumping on these early reporting of issues as fact, and they are what they are, and the information is going to evolve as it evolves. But it just, people are saying that their ballots were getting disqualified, or apparently were disqualified because they were marked with a Sharpie, which bled through the ballot. Others are saying that's not the case. So, but if there's an ability to do an audit and a verification and a cross-checking, let it be done, because it's too close at this point.
And for people wondering what that legal remedy, it's a manual recount. Courts can always order that. Each state has its own rules. Some states do an automatic computer recount if it's within a certain margin. Some do it. That's why I found some of the margins suspicious in the Midwest. They were getting right outside the automatic recount margin. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
It's what you would do if you were trying to steal the election. Now the only difference is if a smart thief would have flooded those ballots early so that it didn't look so bad. But here's the problem. If you're waiting for the observers to leave, you can't do it, because if those ballots aren't in regular custody, they're sitting out in George's van. And at least there's Crowder's got people saying they saw it, that they saw stuff coming in that looked like it was being counted as ballots. Eric Trump has tweeted out somebody burning and destroying Trump ballots. So we don't know fully. These were the risks of trying an election that the country has never done before. It's one thing for Colorado or Florida or Washington to do a bunch of mail-in balloting when they have history with it. It's a whole nother animal to have states where they have big cities that have a history of voter fraud doing it. This was inviting risk unless we put in safeguards, and the Supreme Court abandoning its duty created this opportunity for fraud to occur, to where no matter what happens, large parts of the country will not believe the election's outcomes. And so that's all in the Supreme Court and all on Justice Barrett, in my view, because she could have been the fifth vote to go the right way. At least she could have, concurred or dissented if that wasn't the case. But we have people that have institutional control who don't want to forfeit that control, and they're willing to resort to any response. I mean, there is a belief by some people that explains some of the assassinations that took place in the 1960s. That was the first time large parts of our public began to doubt what was going on within our own government. The 1950s was very much Harriet, what was it, Ozzie and Harriet? Whatever it was sort of nice, suburban, safe, everything's wonderful, the world is sweet, our government is good, civics book version of how a law is made. That little, I don't know if you ever saw it, in America we have this little cartoon.
Oh, yeah, no, that's the, the thing. I can hear the song in my head. I just forget what the name
exactly.
Is.
Exactly, it's carrying the little law and it goes up through Congress. That's not how laws are made. But people were mostly asleep. And at a minimum, what will come out of this is people being more awake, more realizing that what that Grundy County guy taught me many years ago when I was just a whippersnapper, when I was just about up to the knee level of a knee high to a not a
grasshopper.
Yes, that's it. Knee high to a grasshopper. That's a Tennessee phrase. I can't believe I blanked on it, but yeah,
I know it. I don't even know how I know it.
I may have cited it before, but he said, Bobby, it's not who votes that counts. It's who counts the votes that count. And that reality is something Americans have been kind of aware of, but not really. And no matter what, they're going to start to realize that we need to have an open, transparent, trackable means of measuring ballot security and ballot legitimacy. And that should be like, at least in Nevada, I could see whether they recorded my ballot the right way, but they didn't allow me to keep the receipt, which I don't understand. I should be able to keep the receipt so you could cross check it later against the actual ballot. Amazing. It reinforces what happened with Durham. The fact Durham took no action, is embarrassing to Barr. It shows how deep the deep state corruption goes. That they refuse to do anything to do. And now if Trump doesn't win, that will die.
I'm going to read Douglas Bird's, which is on point. It's clear the FBI is corrupt at the top and likely incompetent when not corrupt. The deep state permanent bureaucracy controls the Department of Justice. Trump should fire from top down 7 levels. There is no reason to trust any of them. Unfortunately,
the key is going to be how much longer he's president of the United States. So depending on what happens with these elections. So there is, people have asked, is there any chance? I think in an honest count, he won the election. Just to be frank about it, I've no doubt about that. And I've never said that in an election. I've lost election bets before, a lot of other things. My candidate has lost before. I've only said that one other time it was for the mayoral candidate I mentioned, that we would have had a runoff, but for what I thought was vote fraud, same thing, anomaly. And again, all 7 people that were involved in that vote getting effort for my opponent, the guy I was working for his opponent, all of them ended up in prison within 3 years, 4 years for various other forms of fraud in the political process. So, I think I was right. Again, all the warning signs, all the red flags are there. And I was surprised at their willingness to do it so openly in a certain sense. And now the other thing that makes it look bad, media has been pushing this potential narrative. They said, oh, you'll be misled and you'll think it's a red mirage and that Trump is up, but not really. And then you have Twitter censoring the president, not allowing the president to tweet things out or putting flags on his tweets about what he's talking about. I mean,
just so no one accuses Robert of misinformation, they're putting flags, which is, you have to do one extra click to get to the president's tweet. It's freaking mind blowing. And what drives me nuts is less so that Trump has lost, but now they've got the blessing to do this whenever they want with a candidate that they don't like. And they are effectively, it's nothing shy of election interference. It's nothing shy of manipulating the democratic process. And they got away with it. And it looks like, well, we're going to see pathway to victory and solutions. But for now, it looks like whatever happens, they've gotten away with it. And they're going to have the last laugh because, like I like to say, it's not my expression, history is written by the victors. And now the media and big tech are going to be the victors in that, what they wanted to do for the last 4 years with Trump, they moved the needle just enough this time around to get it done. And it's yep. Discouraging.
Well, I mean, you look at two of the books, one of the books I have behind me, Liberty and Power. It's about the whole Andrew Jackson era when they stole it from him in 1824. And the utility was his response was to really organize deep and broad. And he built a movement that was much bigger than him in 1828. That really gave a sort of a peak of working class prosperity in large parts of the country from 1828 to 1860. I mean, issues obviously with slavery and treatment of Native Americans, but for his voting constituency, he delivered in mass for the most part. But it took him getting an election stolen from him for that movement to really build some roots. Kevin Phillips, Boiling Point, talked about how this was the case in the early 90s too. And working class voters were looking for a way to express their dissent. And unfortunately, they really didn't get a full opportunity to see that reflected into policy because enough of a populist movement did not build. So the answer to all of these problems is there needs to be a deeper, broader, wider populist movement that's institutionalized and that develops connections and contacts in the way the populist moment that I talked about from Lawrence Goodwin, the populist parties of the 1880s and 1890s did. that finally hemmed in the power of the railroads, that finally hemmed in the power of the big trust, that finally hemmed in the power of corrupt political class. It didn't wasn't perfect, but it was a dramatic improvement over where the world was going if they didn't take action. So the still there's power and resistance. I think, again, if honest vote, Trump wins. There's a decent chance that when they count the ballots in Arizona, Trump has won. And if they don't count a bunch of extra suddenly appearing ballots out of Philadelphia, Trump will win Pennsylvania, and then he's won the presidency. But yeah. I think they have every intention of not letting either happen.
Now, let me, I'm going to just I can't bring it up, but it's Peter B. who said, $50 super chat. Thank you. He says, Barnes, I think this represents a victory of 1984 Department of Truth developed by the MSM and social media. I do not think the mind will be free in your or my lifetime. So look, the cynical, and by the way, I hope I wasn't blocking your face when I had that comment up. I think it was only on my computer. So here's the question. Okay, pathway to victory. They've declared Michigan for Biden. So setting aside, barring a reversal in Michigan, Lord knows what that's going to take, but that's going to be a court decision if it gets there. That's going to be hinged on excluding potentially late ballots that ought not to have been included. We don't know the numbers, but we don't know where that's going to go, but that's going to go somewhere fast. Setting aside flipping Michigan back to Trump, what's left of a pathway to victory now? He's got to win Wisconsin, Nevada. Yeah.
Just hold Georgia and North Carolina and then add Pennsylvania and Arizona. So, I mean, that's why Trump has said he won. Trump has declared that he has won, which, by the way, that's never happened before where someone who's been the victim of fraud. The reason why they got away with it in the past, well, not so much 1824 or 1876, but in 1876, the Democrats conceded. In 1824, Andrew Jackson was mad as the Dickens that he had the election stolen from him and fought for the next 4 years until he got elected president in 1828 and the birth of the then Democratic Party. The counter to that is that in the past, 1960, they probably stole it from Richard Nixon, but Nixon conceded. In 2000, there's arguments about what really happened in Florida. Gore ultimately didn't concede it. People have asked, what's the ultimate remedy here? The actual ultimate remedy is with the House of Representatives. So the courts can order new elections and throw out ballots, but assuming if they don't get involved in that manner, it's up to the Electoral College could have an elector say, I don't like what happened and vote a different way. Because some states prohibit that, but most states do not. An elector can vote their conscience. So there's always some risk there. They tried to get it the other way in 2016. They try to get Trump electors to not vote for him. But ultimately it's up to the House. The House of Representatives decides any challenge, any contest, so people can be encouraging their individual House members to make sure they file a challenge so that there's a House vote. And the House vote is by delegation. It's not majority of House members. So it's by state delegation. And I believe Republicans are likely going to have a majority there. So theoretically, if the House believes that if the Republican House members believe the election's been stolen, and in some manner, they can say Trump is the legitimate winner. And effectively in 1876, they declared the guy who probably lost the winner as part of a compromise. They said Hayes won when Hayes did not. They have, and in 1824, they did the same thing, denied it, they gave it to John Quincy Adams over Andrew Jackson, when clearly Jackson had won the vote, popular and electoral. There were some disputed states in 1876, but most people think it was probably the Tilden who won. So the Congress has the full power to put Trump into power, including the Republicans in Congress, and people can put pressure on them to do so if they believe the election was stolen. That's why I believe the court of public opinion is critical here.
There, you may be hearing a child come downstairs. Not the end of the world if it happens. What would that look like? Because then you'd be getting into a situation where the other side is going to now say they're not respecting the vote of the people, and they're like, and giving the Electoral College votes to the person who didn't win. It would be sort of like what happened between Hillary and Bernie with the superdelegates back in 2016. People would be up in arms about that as well.
It's the political constitutional remedy is that, and that's where the court of public opinion matters. If the Republicans believe Trump is the legitimate winner by what they can prove, that's why the court of public opinion is probably more critical than the courts of law. In this case, show the court of public opinion with smart statistical evidence that this was stolen, convince the Republicans in Congress that it was stolen, and then they can put Trump back in and say, look, this was stolen. We're not going to go along with a stolen election. The country elected us to these positions. The Constitution gave us the final legal barometer of these decisions, and we're going to go along with that, and we're going to follow that.
But what do you, I mean, this is a political question, a pure opinion question. What do you say to the fact that there's a lot of Republicans out there who don't mind seeing Trump get booted out of office in any event? He got the dirty job done in terms of what they wanted. He got three picks on the SCOTUS. He shook the system. He reinvigorated, re-energized the base, but he's too controversial of a figurehead. Get him out and, you know, I don't know, get, I'm going to forget his name, the Texas senator, the Texas guy. Starts with a C. No, not Cruz. The military vet, blind in one eye.
Oh, yes, Dan Crenshaw.
Dan Crenshaw. Get someone who, you know, a fighter like Crenshaw, and who's a more palatable public figure, and not somebody who, a controversial public figure like Trump. Which kind of brings us to this question, actually: what's the assessment of Trump's legal team in terms of whether or not they're up to the challenge of the defense, given the fact that the media will not report anything but Biden won?
I mean, a lot of the people on his legal team probably donated to Biden. I mean, in terms of the law firms they are. So the short answer is I don't have a great deal of confidence. I think some of them mean well. I think Rudy Giuliani means really well and has some public reputation. That's why they've waged war on him. I think what's probably more important is what – and some of the suits are okay. They're just – they could be stronger. They could be better. Like if I'd been running the legal defense team, all of my pre-election suits would have said Democrats are going to steal the election. Democrats are going to steal the election. I would have started off with the thing that's really driving the lawsuit. The lawsuit isn't some technical compliance issue. The lawsuit is a critical safeguard is being removed to allow corruption to occur, and it will occur in ways that will discredit our institutions in America for good. You have to grab a judge's attention to shake them up so they recognize that. Otherwise, you're fighting an uphill battle. So. But, you know, I think what Project Veritas is doing, what Steven Crowder was doing, what the people who watch this are doing in their own little ways, every way they can, collectively and aggregately, is the best chance to make a difference. Because ultimately, no matter what any state declares, the ultimate check on fraud that our Constitution created was for the state majority of state delegations in the House to say who was the real winner. That was our check. And we can exercise that check because the people sent a majority of states as Republicans to those. And for those Republicans, put them on record and make them, if they're going to betray Trump, make them do so publicly. If they're going to go along with a fraudulent election, make them do so publicly so that then they can be dealt with later on politically. I think if they were put on the record, I don't think they would, especially, again, win the court of public opinion. Show that these just are inexplicable results. Every indicia of fraud is evidenced here, and then find some egregious examples.
But it's the problem with the two-party system. Put them on the record, and then if they defy the will, what do? Vote for the other. You vote for the other guy. Like, there is no viable third alternative. You're voting for the devil you know or the devil you don't like. It's like, okay, put them on record, and they defy your will, and they vote Trump out, and they go along with it, and they give the votes. Okay, good. Now what do you do? Your only alternative is to vote for the Democrat guy who you presumably like even less. What was I going to say? Sorry, I got this Rich Brex's Project Veritas. Apparently they're going to announce something soon, so we'll see where that goes. Selv, we shouldn't have to fight for a reasonably valid election process, but the Democrats keep forcing us to do it. This is okay. Now, so I think we've got that question. There was one more question that I wanted to ask. Oh, someone sent me an email. Apparently they tried to get a question in. I won't mention their name. Apparently Steve Bannon is floating this idea, and it's the 14th Amendment allows the president to strip electoral college votes from states supporting censorship and voters enabling mass arrests. So
that's an interpretation. So the 14th Amendment was designed to deal with states that might be trying to do slavery or things like that. So the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments were passed as a means of dealing with the rebellious South. So it is the case that you could, it's theoretically the case that the 14th Amendment empowers the ability for the executive branch to rule certain electoral votes don't count for some reason. No one's tried it since the Civil War days. So so I get the theory. My view again is focus on, hey, there's a political remedy here that's well within your power. It's the constitutional remedy, the House vote. And the best way to get there is expose in the court of opinion how the fraud happened and find it in both statistical ways so that sort of people get the data, but not just that. Include as part of the narrative examples and include what's part of the stories like the suit they filed in Michigan, because I did read the suit. The suit is they excluded Trump's guy from being able to watch what was going to happen when they counted all these votes that suddenly appeared. So the tell that part of the narrative. They tell the there's a person in Georgia who said his father was sent home, told that there was no more ballots going to be counted. He can go home. And then he came back in the morning and found a bunch of ballots were happening. Tell those stories. Get those stories out. Get those examples out and find some dead people who voted. Find some people who moved who voted. And if you're lucky, see if you can find some people who are shocked to discover that they voted when they didn't. So try to get as many of those stories out there. Push those stories as much as possible. Because he's got to win in the court of public opinion. And my view is the remedy that should be focused upon is ultimately with Congress. Congress has a constitutional obligation to make sure the person who actually won is the one who is put in office and not the someone who there is good reason to believe stole it. Now, Congress can hold hearings on it. Congress can do a trial on it. But so all of these things are options.
But all of these things happen after the damage is done, and after this is not going to happen between now and January, is it? Or is that?
It can. I mean, ultimately, the House can decide whether to certify the Electoral College vote or not. And if they say no, it's Trump who won, then Trump is the president.
Tabarouette, by the way, is French for some. It's a swear word in French, Quebec French. That would be one heck of a revenge for the impeachment. that would be a good third act. And now I just want to read what his name is, Mike Hunt. And yes, I get the joke, Mike. They told us they were going to do this. The Red Mirage, mainstream media, and big tech did this too. It's a $20 super chat, so I can't bring it up anymore. Yes, it is incredible because the writing. Oh wait, I can't. It's not. This is another one. But it was the writing was on the wall, and it's just. Mm-hmm.
Actually do it. I mean, to do it so brazenly, to do it so boldly. This is what I mean by we have incompetent, corrupt people with great degrees of power. And that is when the great problems have occurred over time's history. Part of it is people get inundated with like a cult-like belief of some perfectibility of man, you know, which is what communism and fascism and cultism and sort of achieves. And then we've seen horror. But the other time we've seen horror is when really incompetent, corrupt people have disproportionate power. And birth this World War One, and without World War One, we likely don't get the rise of communism. We don't likely get the rise of fascism. We likely don't get World War Two, which killed ultimately, when you include the communist governments, hundreds of millions of people. So it is a dangerous time because these people are brazen in what they do, don't believe that they can be held in check. And the fact that Durham took no meaningful action, the fact the Supreme Court took no meaningful action, led them to believe we can do whatever we want. And now the only resistance is the popular will of the people. And that's why people have to do whatever they can.
And incidentally, just to qualify that so that nobody makes any accusations of dog whistles or instigating, this is all within the rule of law. No, yeah. But this is people like to hear dog whistles because confession through projection. Whenever I hear people use the term dog whistle, typically they're the ones using them more often than not. None of this is dog whistle talk. This is put pressure on your elected officials. And incidentally, there are outlets to work with. Steven Crowder, you know, he's a funny guy. He seems to do some pretty decent investigative journalism. Project Veritas, despite being written off and censored by the mainstream media, do good. I mean, they're written off. They do work that is valuable work that the media used to do, I think. Unless my memory's off.
No doubt about it. And here's to protect our Constitution built in the safeguard, which is let the House vote on who actually won and do whatever necessary review is necessary. And in my view, if you exclude observers from the process you should not be allowed to count the ballots related to it. And again, the legal remedy is Congress saying who actually won the vote. Not whatever ballot stuffing occurred. You can punish that effectively and constitutionally and just put public pressure by exposing that's what took place and pressure on congressmen to take action. The great thing and the genius of the Constitution was it built in safeguards. And this is the safeguard. It just requires congressmen to actually take action and not hide.
It's fascinating. Now, I said we would go for a hard 60 minutes, but it's impossible. There's always too much to talk about. The next steps now, so they're going to announce, they've announced Michigan. There's going to be a lawsuit. There is a lawsuit currently that's going to go on with Michigan to determine whether or not there's a recount, what happens. The pathway, nonetheless, is still potential, even if things remain the way they are now as called. We're going to see Arizona's expected to call it in tomorrow. Which one was it? People were asking this as well. Is it Pennsylvania that says we're not reporting anything until tomorrow?
Nevada.
How does that happen? Like how is that within the purview or the discretion of the state to say it's transparent voting and ballot counting, but we're not giving you any news until tomorrow. We're holding you all in the dark in the most consequential, among the most consequential states in the most consequential election in the history of America. How does that happen?
Especially if they're thinking, well, maybe we can, we won't have to steal it. We can give it to Trump because it won't matter. The other states go the other way. I mean, that's the impression that's left. That's what makes this so bad. They're so lacking in transparency, and they're doing secretive activities, surreptitious activities that only raise doubts about what the real objective has been and what they're really up to. And it's unfortunate we got to this place, but it's the place that we're at. Now, I think we're going to answer some locals questions. Yeah, I don't know.
That's what I was just pulling on my phone so I can get. So we got AJ Cook on locals says, Viva Fry, practically can fraud be proven in states with Dem governors?
It's always the tricky part. And so you can show an inference of fraud from statistical analysis. And folks can remember there was a bunch of recounts in 2016 and they produced experts that argued fraud for different reasons. So you can produce a range of experts that can show all the statistical anomalies that I talked about as being highly unlikely to have occurred. And that you can do that. You can also then try to produce, and then the safeguards against fraud were not present. And number two, and then number three, and usually the safeguards is what you're technically suing over. You're suing over some safeguard missing. And you want that safeguard to apply or for there to be some remedy or consequence when it was not enforced at the time it needed to be enforced, like an observer when they bring the ballots in to count them. Whether signatures were properly counted on absentee ballots that came in. Did they cross-check them? Like, I'll give you an example. If they do a real recount and as part of the recount process, they require cross-checking the signatures against the registered voter signature, I guarantee you Wisconsin and Michigan would flip back to Trump. So if they meaningfully did a manual recount.
How long would that take to do that for two? Michigan is
over a week or two. A week or two, but depending on the number of personnel. The amount of personnel, but the hardest part would be the signature checking, because I can guarantee you, but if I'm right that there's a lot of peculiar ballots, those peculiar ballots will disproportionately not match the signature on file in those states where that can be done. So that's a particular path they can take. So and then ultimately, like I said, the remedy is political, and the Constitution anticipated that whoever the country elected to the House would make the determination, again, by state delegation, not the total number of House members, but by state delegation as to who actually won the presidential election. And I think that is probably the most appropriate remedy.
Okay. And now we got another one, which is also from locals people, because I said we would get at least five questions from the members on locals who had a lot of thumbs up on their questions. This is from Dave MN. He says, Viva Fry, how did Biden's votes go up 138,000 in Michigan without Trump's numbers of votes never changing? Same with the inexplicable jump on the charts in Wisconsin, then Pennsylvania, pausing counting at 3:30 a.m., announcing we'll start again at 9 a.m. All polling judges leave, then counting resumes at 4 a.m., just as a van with coolers and a red wagon full of absentee ballots show up. So I'm not sure that that's as much of a question as it is a statement, but touche, Dave. Let's get a couple more here. We got Gunnir, G-U-N-G-N-I-R, he says, Viva Fry, is there a scenario left where Trump can actually win? Looks like even with Pennsylvania, Georgia, and North Carolina, he won't have enough electors to get to 270 unless Arizona, Nevada, or Michigan flips.
That's correct. He needs Arizona or Nevada. He needs Arizona and Pennsylvania while holding Georgia and North Carolina.
All right. Let's do this one. Da-ba-ba. Here we go. No, I got that one already. Sorry, folks, I know I'll get to some. Viva, serious question. It's obvious there have been and remain serious issues in vote security and manipulation of outcomes for many years. How can this be solved without a constitutional amendment? And I think you've answered that one, Robert.
Well, I mean, I do like the House process as a means of this checking on it. I think the Constitution was smart in that regard. But I do believe we needed massive reform of our elections. We need uniform rules in all the states. We need to make it open and transparent. We need to vote on only one day. I guarantee you, for example, if we didn't have this massive vote by mail, Trump would have won in Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin without even getting this close to have a margin of being within the margin of fraud. Because think about all the people who voted while he had COVID. Think about people who voted before the last debate. I mean, that's another commission. The debate commission refused to have the second debate the time it was scheduled. Instead, only did the third debate, knowing that that would mean a third of the country would have voted before they even witnessed that debate. So I've never been a big fan of early voting. I think all it does is contaminate the elections. It favors institutional elites. Let's only vote on one day, like was always anticipated, one election day. And your absentee ballot can come back on that day in some manner if you qualify, but limit who qualifies for it. None of this voting days, weeks, months in advance. I understand that you might need to ship it out to military people and have some exception for military personnel. I get that. But it needs to be limited to those extraordinary circumstances, not broad across the board, because it invites this kind of dubious election result.
Okay, excellent. I'm going to read this one. This is a long one. It's Mr. Robe 237, who says, Viva Fry, a nice hypothetical situation for Robert Barnes. We'll use Michigan for the example. Let's say Trump lawyers uncover election tampering. Let's assume the videos that surface of Michigan count locations is in fact fraudulent ballots being brought in and counted, and they follow the trail and prove that there was fraud. Would the Trump campaign first have to file suit to be allowed to investigate and uncover the fraudulent activities? Question one.
Yes.
Okay. Question two. If they did sue, what court would it go to first? SCOMI, SCOTUS, District, Local Court.
Probably the Michigan Court of Claims where they're filing now, because that's the court, if you want to go the state process, because I believe there's a Republican majority on the Michigan Supreme Court that would oversee it.
Okay. And three, if it goes to court and they prove their case that there was election fraud, what would the likely ruling be? Just like the fraudulent votes be taken away from the final tallies, any recourse come down on election officials or count employees, or would that be a different suit?
Again, in terms of individual consequences, that would likely be a different course of action, civil or criminal, against the individual implicated. But the court's remedies are, you know, like it could various forms of recounts and things of that nature. But all the second can be throwing out ballots that were done in some problematic manner or were counted in some problematic manner. Or third, it could be ordering another election. I mean, at least in North Carolina, just a couple of years ago, that was the remedy.
It would be, geez. I mean, it would be among the least crazy things to happen in 2020. It's like when that is the saner versions of potential realities. This is the fourth one, which I think we just got to. The big one: if there is a pending litigation, but the electors cast their votes and Biden wins, is there any law precedent for postponing inauguration, or is that just going to be awkward when Biden moves into the White House for a couple of months, only to be relocated back to his basement? Okay, I'll skip the last part of that. So, can you postpone inauguration?
I think constitutionally that's required.
Okay.
So that's where, again, the check on the process is supposed to be the House.
Okay. And we got here, Phil Mario P says, how vulnerable would federal election minimum standards be?
I mean, they could. It's always an open question constitutionally how much the feds can require the states to apply certain rules. But at least in the context of the Voting Rights Act, they usually... that those have been enforced by the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment. So if you can couch it as a voting rights issue under the Constitution, under the Due Process Clause or Equal Protection Clause, then you could create federal minimum standards that are uniform and enforceable.
Okay. And we got a new member here, Ajon the Whippet. And then we got after this, Adam K says, Viva Fry. Scott Adams predicted there would be a time when we have two presidents. Well, okay. I don't know. I'd like to hear it, but we'll see. There would be two dueling presidents. That I think there was a time when there were two presidents as well. Quick question, actually. The Texas drive-through lawsuit, just totally random question. Do I understand that the legal basis for that lawsuit was that they had broadened the drive-through laws to allow everybody to do a drive-through, and the issue is that they didn't actually go to the polling station. The polling station came to them?
Effectively, yes. And of course, the courts did nothing about it. you know, the, which is unfortunate. But again, that's the history. If generally speaking, steal the vote first, and usually they're not going to catch you afterwards. So the, and what's the worst remedy? I mean, the worst thing that could happen is, you know, if you're someone who wants to steal the election, your worst outcome is that you don't get to steal the election. So there's almost no downside to trying. And only the individuals occasionally get prosecuted. Generally, the system itself doesn't, you know, punish anyone, except for that North Carolina case where they did order a new election. And I mean, it, put it this way, the most confidence-inducing remedy would probably be a new election in those states. That would probably induce the most confidence in terms of the public as to the outcome.
Yeah.
Because like, okay, you got to do over. Let's see what happens. But the but I don't think that's likely to occur. And the only question is, will they honor it, not try to steal it in Arizona and Pennsylvania? And if they do, will the House do something about it or not?
Okay, amazing. Let me bring out, I just want to get this comment off, but I want to not bring up an offensive one in order to do that. Order a new election. Okay, good one. We'll get rid of that now. Okay, so the next steps, now we're going to make an announcement.
Oh, I was saying, Super Chat is right. The state legislatures do have a role here too, potentially, depending on the state.
Okay, and how would GOP state delegations pick Trump when Nancy Pelosi won't let them?
Won't matter. I mean, you vote by delegation. So however that vote is, end of the story. Speaker of the House only has so much power.
Okay. The next, so the next steps we're looking for, we're going to look for the next announcements. In theory, this could be academic if it goes, if Trump gets what's needed to be, to win the Electoral College, even if he does. So what's going to happen? The media is going to call it, obviously, if Biden hits 270, Trump's lawsuits are going to remain and go forward full steam. We're going to start hearing progress on that front. And then what? The last 2 months of Trump's presidency is going to be election lawsuits, like big ones, and pardons, left, right, and center?
I hope so. He's got to reward these people who did everything possible to undermine him. So, you know, pardon Assange, pardon Snowden, pardon Flynn, and that show, and pardon anyone else that's been railroaded by the system, just to send a message to the system writ large that they will not be rewarded for what they've been doing.
And we got a Kargush says, if Biden wins, the actual winner is the big pharma, military, industrial complex, and most of all, China. Biggest losers will be Americans. Yeah. That's my whatever. I have concerns about what might actually happen under a Biden Kamala Harris presidency in terms of global conflict, which Trump has been very good at avoiding for all his foibles, whereas the rhetoric on the debate stage is go to war with China and Russia as though it's you know, the time of year. Why not make mail-in ballots with 1/3 vote, allow voting in person to equal 1 vote? Okay. creative. Robert, let's think about, does anyone else get some questions in if anybody has them? Robert, did we forget anything that we're to be expecting on the near future? We're still going to have a stream Sunday, so everyone don't worry about that. We just thought, Robert and I were messaging today. I said, I think people need, they don't need reassurance, because you can't, reassurance is sort of a spiritual guidance. What they need is knowledge to feel more secure in what they should expect going forward. And so I hope we've done that tonight. I think we have. Have we missed anything else?
I don't think so. And then, and I'll still be all week on our locals page, so that so people can find the vivabarneslaw.locals.com. I'll be responding to all subscribers. We're still figuring out the platform, so the so for folks that get a little agitated about how, you know, the still figuring it out. So the but it's an opportunity, and I am, you know, conscious of the fact that for a lot of people, $5 is a lot of money. You know, I grew up where $5 was a lot of money. You know, $5 could be a week's worth food. So I'm not unsympathetic to that. So we'll continue to provide exclusive content to the subscribers on there to make it so that you feel it's warranted.
Absolutely. And I think I need to specify, a lot of people have followed us there, and a lot of people are supporting us there. And I may have to temper the expectations that not everyone's going to get one-on-one, but there's going to be a lot of exclusive interactions on that platform. It's like Facebook. And we've got, I think there's like 7,000 people who are following. They're called the members, and then like a number of supporters. There's a lot of people there, more than I ever thought we would have gotten in 2 days. So it may not be one-on-one, but it's exclusive, and there's a lot more personalized interactions there.
For example, last night we had a live chat, so that people, when Trump was surging in the betting markets, I said, now is probably a good time to lock in your profit. A lot of them did. So hundreds of them made back that $5 many times over. And I think as one of them put that they made enough money to keep paying $5 to their great, great, great grandparents generation or great kids generation, whatever it was. But the point is that we did provide, that's a great example of how you can get value out of it. But going to continue to fight this fight one way or the other, no matter which way it appears to go, no matter which way it does go. To me, the battle is just beginning. It is long from over, no matter what happens in this election.
All right. And I missed the chat. It was $17.76, which I think has historical meaning, but it disappeared. I'm sorry. I couldn't get you. It was a name with a number and a letter in it. Okay. So let's wind it. Let's call this now. We will do these updates as if we need to, we'll do them again. This one, I think everyone needed. I hope everyone feels a little better, a little more knowledgeable on what can happen, where things are going to go. And at the very least, more enlightened as to there are problems with the system. We've been seeing them for a long time, and it is not a time of giving up on hope of better betterment and change. Now you know what the issues are, and to some extent, you know what you can do to fight it. But at the very least, now you know where this is going to go for the next 2 months, and it's not going away anytime soon. So it's going to be a fascinating 2 months. And now I get to relive the 2000 Bush v. Gore as an adult who's aware of his surroundings, and it's going to be all the more meaningful.
No, everybody, they keep providing interesting content, that's for sure.
I hate being cynical about that. It's just like, I just realized, like, yeah, I want to understand this, and there's a lot of people who are not understanding it, and by the participation and the comments and the support, a lot of people want to understand this, and if this is my ikigai, I love it. I love it. And I, Robert, if nothing else, we met out of this, and it's a wonderful thing.
Well, the way I put it is every obstacle is an opportunity. And so it's an opportunity to get self-educated. And by getting self-educated, you get self-empowered. And it's good people with knowledge who change the world. So even if you face some second act hurdles where things look doomed and you're not able to get what you want at that moment, does not mean by any stretch of the imagination that the battle is over. It's usually just beginning.
And with that said, everybody, thanks for the support. Thanks for tuning in. We will see you Sunday. Check us out on Locals. We check comments. We're on social media, Twitter, everything. Links in the pinned comment. Enjoy the evening and sleep well tonight. Everyone went to bed late last night. Sleep well, fresh air, exercise, and we'll see you on the webs.